It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
All right, welcome to FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward, glad to have y'all here on this Saturday morning, even though we're recording this from a time and a place that is different than our studios as normal.
Very different.
We're sitting at Mike's hunting camp up in the country in the Black Belt and getting ready to go turkey hunting tomorrow. Mike, thanks for having me up.
Well, say that tomorrow.
Well, listen, I feel good about tomorrow.
Well, I do too, but you just never know.
I want to talk about, and on today's show, we've got a lot to talk about. We're going to talk about land with Mike. We're also going to talk about turkey hunting and a whole lot more. But, you know, saying what you just said, so we've had experience this last week, since turkey season started on Monday. You hunted Monday?
I hunted Monday. I sure did.
And I hunted Wednesday.
Yeah.
And it's pretty interesting. Monday, you had pretty bad conditions.
It was blowing 30 miles an hour. It was terrible.
Okay, now this is bad conditions, but you had birds gobbling.
Yeah, we did. We heard two turkeys gobble, and I guess we called them up, or a hen brought them to us, but they never got closer than about 60 yards. They stayed 60 to about 80 yards from us, strutting, drumming, you know, chasing the hen around the whole time. We stayed there for, me and a friend of mine, David Lauber, we stayed there for probably 4 hours, maybe longer. I got to see something that I've only seen one other time. I got to see the gobbler top the hen.
Okay. Now, was that on in the morning or first thing or what?
No, it was on in the morning. It was probably about 10 o'clock, I guess. It's kind of funny. Me and David was kind of laughing. We really got them fired up. I mean, they were over there strutting, you know, just kind of strutting around. And, you know, the hen was over there close to him. And he just strutting around, kind of going in circles and all that. And then we started doing the fight and purr. We said, we're going to really make, there's two gobblers over there, so we're going to really make them mad and get them to come see us, you know?
Right. The only thing that could get them to leave a hen is a fight.
A fight, you know, and then I had a goblin too. I mean, it was pretty open woods, so I couldn't do a whole lot. I mean, I could see them. I could see what they're doing out there.
Right.
So we had to be kind of careful of it. But when we started doing the fight and purr, he was going around in circles, and then he started going faster and faster and faster. He just going
so
around me.
So instead of breaking and coming to y'all, he just went faster around the hen.
It made him mad. He just started going fast as he could be, and me and David just started laughing.
I mean, this is early season, and the hens are still with the gobblers. They hadn't left them. I mean, obviously, she's just getting bred now, and so that would have been Monday was the 25th.
Yes, that's right, opening day.
Right, so just still breeding hens at, you know, all the sort of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And when they got through with that hen, I don't know whether it was a noise that they made or this hen was over somewhere watching or something, but this other hen come.
To another hen comes in.
Come running in. I mean, it's just, you know, started getting with the gobbler, going around in circles and doing the thing they do, you know. But I didn't get to see him make one.
You think he bred her too?
I bet he did. I mean, they ended up moving.
So there are two gobblers. Did one gobbler do all the breeding?
One gobbler did the breeding. The other one just strutted and drummed. I mean, even though the wind was blowing as hard as it was, and they were 60 to 80 yards, maybe 100 yards at times, we could still hear them.
You know, it's interesting because conversations we've had with Chuck Sykes and others that said it is the dominant gobbler that does all the breeding.
Yeah.
And that's that issue where they've moved the start date later. Now, it doesn't, you know, on private land, you make your own choices or whatever, but public land, they're trying to make sure more hens get bred, because if you shoot that gobbler, it takes a couple days, at least what Chuck's told us, for the hierarchy to reset and that other gobbler, maybe not even that one, to become dominant and start breeding again. It doesn't happen like that afternoon.
And that's what Chuck says. What Chuck tells us. And I have to go with him because, I mean, he's got the science behind it.
Right.
I don't know that for a fact. I have no idea.
But there was the dominant gobbler does a breeding. The other one's strutting, but never did not top the hen.
He did not. He didn't fool with the hen at all. He just looked kind of over to the side, you know, 10 yards or so, and he was just going over here, going around in circles, doing his own thing by himself.
You know, this is what's interesting, too. So that's Monday. Like, if you had to score on 0 to 10 for turkey hunting days, it might be a 4.
Oh, probably a 2.
A 2.
It just wasn't raining to make it a 0.
Right. So there's no sleet, no rain. But y'all had some gobbling. You had that big show. So flash forward to Wednesday. So Wednesday, it's pretty perfect. Still, you know, we had a big full moon, but it was still weather. And light north wind. Perfect. Hunting at my place. And I heard, like I think I told you earlier, when we got up here to your place, I said I heard 2.5 gobbles.
Yeah.
On Wednesday morning.
Yeah.
Perfect conditions. Didn't hear it. The landowner to the west of me got a big block of land as well. Heard one gobble. Wednesday morning, talked to people who hunted in the river swamp in southeast Washington County. They said they blew the leaves off the trees. Talked to a guy who hunts in Lowndes County. Talked to him this evening before I walked back in here. He said they blew it up today in Lowndes County.
How about that?
So it's a crazy thing. I mean, because it's not that I don't have turkeys. They just did not. They didn't do it.
It might have been that it might have been a little cooler up north. Might have made a little difference. Very possible.
Yeah,
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what some days they'll
gobble. From southeast Washington County to western Mobile County, there's a temperature difference, but it's not drastic. Now, Lowndes County could be a different story. But
and that's what I was more thinking about was Lowndes County.
But it's interesting to see. I mean, here's a bad weather day on Monday, opening day for you.
Yep.
And they do it here in the
Well, I hear two. You know, normally on my place, I will, on a good day, I'll hear 6 or 8 or 10.
Okay,
or
it was less.
But you couldn't, you couldn't hear more than probably 300 yards.
Right.
You just couldn't hear it. So there might have been more turkeys gobble around. We just couldn't hear them.
So I guess what I'm digging at here, and I don't know if there's any science behind this, but you have barometric pressure, weather, all these kind of things that overall determine the chance of having turkeys gobbling. But beneath that, different properties on a different day.
It's different.
Yeah. It's a different story.
It is totally different. I mean, I've been on my place before and going beautiful, perfect day, not hear a turkey gobble. I mean, not one. Go the next day. Exact same weather conditions, everything, and they gobble everywhere, every direction. Why? I have no idea what that... It's not like they're not there. I knew they were there.
Right. That's the same thing at my place. It's not like we didn't know we had turkeys.
That's right.
You know, I live
on
a property.
You've got enough cameras.
And I drive by them every day. I know they're there, but they just didn't Wednesday morning, even though it was beautiful. They just didn't do it.
And I don't... I'd like to know what causes that, but we'll never know, I guess.
That's kind of what makes it fun, for sure.
Yeah. And when I tell you I hear 6 or 8 or 10 or 12... Now, that's on a good morning.
Right.
Okay. Now, I go sometimes don't hear but 1 or 2 or 3 or 4, but normally on a good day, I'll hear 6 at least just about.
You know, it's one of these things, too, thinking about where we are in the Black Belt. And I hunt, you know, like I said, in Mobile County, and I grew up hunting a lot in the river swamp and, you know, in southeast Washington County and Baldwin County and Mobile County. But it seems like the turkey hunting, y'all are still, even though the whole state is different areas having trouble, it seems like this area in the Black Belt, from where we are right now, down to or over to Lowndes County and all that, it's not as good as it used to be, but it's still better than it is in other areas like Clark County, Washington County, Mobile County. Do you think that, I mean, do you hear that?
Yeah, I mean, up here where we're hunting right now, I think it's as good as it's been. I mean, we have lots of turkeys right now. Now, back years ago, it wasn't as good as it is now, don't think.
So, I mean, riding up today and, you know, paying attention, because I was watching the road, but my head swivels, and I used to hunt up here a bunch, not too far from here, so I'm looking at how things changed and all that. It's been a while since I've been up here. The landscape here, I mean, there's big cattle pastures and all those kind of things, but other than that, I don't know that the woods are any... I'm trying to pick out through the woods how they're different than where it is in Clark County or Washington County. I don't see it. I don't know what's going on.
No, there's not much difference now.
And y'all got predators, you got hogs, you got all those things up here that are limiting factors, but yet the Black Belt still is generally up. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Abrupt stop to the last segment. That's a battery issue from my side.
Yep.
As we are. And by the way, if you're just joining us, this show recorded right here in the Black Belt. Mike and I are getting ready to go turkey hunting tomorrow. Looked at some land today. We're going to talk about land later on in the show. But we're talking turkeys right now and kind of like the mixed bag this week so far with what people had great hunts. I had bad hunts in good weather. You had good hunts in bad weather. And we're talking about the population. Although, looking at this and seeing it around here, in the Black Belt, maybe there are some changes I can't detect, but from years ago when I hunted around here, I don't see a big change in the amount of timber or lack of timber or how the land's... But this area has weathered it a lot better, I think, generally, turkey population-wise, versus a Washington County, Clark County, elsewhere.
Well, the terrain has definitely changed a lot, Sean, around where I'm hunting at anyway. For years and years, when I was up here back in the 70s and 80s,
sure, from hunting, that point. Yeah, now you've got trees.
Yeah, there was just soybean fields, right, and cornfields as far as I could see, and there was hedgerows and, you know, a little patch of woods here, a little patch of woods there. Now, it's all woods just about. Very little fields anymore. You got to go, we're in Marengo County, and you got to go north Marengo County now to get into soybeans and stuff. So, well, what I'm hunting now is about a 40-year-old pine plantation.
Right.
So, 40 years ago, what is that? That's 84, give mm-hmm. or take. Somewhere around in there is when they started planting all the pines up here. They were on that CRP program.
Right.
And that's really... I made the turkeys come on strong around here, you know, all these pines now. I mean, you're going to see tomorrow, you haven't been on this piece that right. I'm hunting right now, but 40-year-old pine plantation, I mean, they're big, and it's open. It's like hunting a big hardwood bottom.
It's like being in the river swamp, except it's pine trees, not oaks.
Instead of hardwoods, it's pines. So, I mean, it's a different hunting where I'm hunting at.
Yeah, but at the same time, we think about the situation where there's areas – south of here we're talking about that got those big pine plantations have grown, not as many because the CRP there, most of that was wooded,
yeah,
versus up here, but you've got, you know, big trees and big timber there, and the it's not like they don't have turkeys, it's not like I don't have turkeys, but we have seen the issues that you hear discussed around the state. We've seen those at Washington County, I think, more than most places. Washington, Clark County, in my experience, has seen a bigger decline than anywhere I hear stories of.
Yeah, and I'm not, you know, I don't hunt there, so I don't know.
I just hear, I mean, you know, I've seen it personally, and I hear people crying the blues in those areas.
Yeah, you know, and I was getting ready to say a while ago before we got cut off was, you know, I know, like, Eddie Salter lives in Greenville.
Right.
Okay, and, I mean, he grew up having just tons of turkeys up there, and now, at least last time I talked to him, which has been probably a couple of years now, but he said that his turkey population around there just gone to almost nothing.
What do you attribute that to?
Eddie Salter.
Yeah, hopefully Eddie gets a copy of this show.
Yeah,
Eddie can check it out. Eddie, it's your fault that you don't have this many turkeys there.
Yeah,
but I mean, there is something to be said. You know, we've talked about this in the biology side, that you've got the reason that the state has push back the start of turkey season is there were hens not getting bred.
That's what they're saying.
Yeah, that if these gobblers were killed earlier, like, I mean, here we sit this first week of turkey season, but back in the day, we'd have been opened already for 10 days or 2 weeks. We used to open around the 15th.
Open the 15th, so we would have been open for 10 days.
Yeah.
You know, and I hate that because I know everybody's the same pretty much as me. There's been a lot of complaints about, you know, opening it up on the 25th and mm-hmm. making it on into May, further into May. And most people, when it gets to May, they got other things going on. You know, there's just, it's hot, mosquitoes, snakes, I mean, just everything.
I've killed turkeys in May the last 2 years or last 3 years.
Oh, so. It's not that you can't kill them. I'm not saying you can't kill them, but people are just, it's just 90 degrees. Mm-hmm. You know, the grass is, instead of being a foot tall, there's 3 foot tall.
Right.
You know, it's just not as pleasant to hunt in. So people like to hunt the first,
but we also like to have turkeys to hunt.
Yes. So hopefully this will work. and we'll bring back the turkey population, and maybe one day we'll get back to hunting March the 15th.
You know, it's interesting. I was listening on the way up here. Once I got out of range of FM Talk 106.5, and I was listening to a podcast, and there were some guys from Oregon, turkey hunters in Oregon, these states where they push turkeys out to, right?
Yeah.
And we think about, like, there's this cycle, and it's just one of the many theories out there that turkeys go through a population. You know, when you put them back on a landscape where they haven't been, they populate pretty quickly. Then they reach a carrying capacity, and then it looks like in some places they start going down, right? Yeah. They reach a, it's like a bell curve. Old in school, you know, some of y'all make the top of the bell curve, then it goes back down. Well, Oregon out there, in those places, they were talking in this podcast, these were call makers, and they said, how's your population out there? They said, it's doing great. There's nothing but building. But they didn't stock turkeys in those places until 25 years after they restocked them here. You know, so maybe they are there in Oregon and Washington State and places like that where we were in the 1990s when, you know, I grew up some turkey hunting in the 80s, but once I kind of got out on my own, 1990, 1991, it seemed like there's a turkey behind every tree.
Yeah. Yeah, there was. There's a lot of turkeys back in the day. You know, and where I was,
but there weren't as many people hunted them either.
That's another thing, Sean. When I was hunting, I first started hunting turkeys, I guess, in 76 or 77, somewhere around in there. I didn't know anything about turkey hunting. I mean, the first time I killed a turkey, it was hilarious. But anyway.
Wait. So what happened there?
Well, all right, I'll tell you my story. Well, I'd never been turkey hunting. Nobody had ever. You know, only thing I was doing, I was listening to Ben Roger Lee. He had a cassette tape, yep. You know. And every time I went turkey hunting, I always played that and listened to it and, you know, tried to figure out how to turkey hunt. Nobody told you how to turkey hunt. There was no TV shows like there is now showing you what to do or how to do or whatever. I didn't know anything about it. Well, first time I ever went, I went walking around the edge of a big soybean field, and I was walking through the woods going to a soybean field, and I look out in the soybean field, and there's a tree out there probably 150 yards from me, and I saw a turkey out around it, and I saw that it had a beard. I couldn't tell what it was, but I could tell it was a gobbler. So anyway, I just backed up in the woods and got behind the bush. I couldn't see the turkey. I just got behind the bush.
Right, hiding.
And I made some turkey calls. I don't know what it was, but it was some turkey calls. So the turkey comes up, and I could see him, and he got on the other side of the bush from me. I'm talking about 5, 6, 7 foot, you know? And I'm just saying, well, is he going to come around? I got my gun. I mean, is he going to come around? I said, I can't see him. Did he leave? You know, I didn't know anything about turkey hunting, so I just jumped up, you know, and just kind of went around that bush, and there he was, and he shocked me, and I shocked him.
Yeah, say, who was more shocked?
He was, and I killed him. I mean, it was like, I didn't know anything about turkey hunting, so that was my first turkey hunt. By accident, I killed a turkey.
That's pretty good on your first one.
Yeah, first time.
Which can ruin a man.
Well, yeah, it did.
But it ruined you for the good. You're still hunting. Because I've seen people that luck out on that first hunt. And they're like, this turkey hunting's nothing. I don't even care about it. It's not even a big deal.
No, because it goes downhill from that.
That is correct.
You know, it is not easy.
Your batting average came off 1,000?
Oh, yes. Way down. For sure.
Hey, and that was a point, too. So you're hunting up here where there just were not a lot of turkeys.
There weren't at that time because there was... Little patches of woods and, you know, big fields. Now, we had turkeys, but it wasn't nothing like it is now up here.
And so you wonder, too, back then, you probably, from a turkey world, you'd say, I sure wish I was hunting that river swamp. I sure was hunting down those longleaves, right?
Yeah. You know, back then, yes.
And now it's different. Now it's people going, man, I wish I was hunting up at the Black Belt.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, things have changed around up here. Our turkey hunting up in Marengo County and Dallas County and up through here, it is good. I mean, I got a lot of friends hunting all in Marengo County, all in Dallas County, and they all seem to have plenty of turkeys. They all go out and hear 6 or 8 or 10 or 12 turkeys most good mornings. So everybody seems to have a lot of turkeys up here. I know other places in the state, it's not like that.
No, and even in places that are good in those other places,
yeah,
here in 12 Turkeys would be exceptional.
Yes.
Would be, like...
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. I hear people tell me that all the time.
I manage for turkeys and do all that.
Yeah.
I've never heard 12 different gobblers in the morning.
Yeah. I mean,
if I hear seven, we're on seven or eight, I'm having a big morning.
And that's a good morning when you see, right, when you hear that many. And that means
every one of them fired off.
And I'm fortunate. I've still got really good hearing. I go with people, and they're standing there, and I said, "You hear that one gobble?" No.
No, you've done that to me before, and I'm 20 years your junior.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing. I wasn't in the military, so I didn't burn my ears out in the military. I never did dove hunt a lot.
Right.
And when I did, I didn't shoot a lot.
And you didn't duck hunt in a pit blind like I did.
I didn't work in
rock and roll radio. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So my hearing is still good. Like I told you, like we were talking about earlier, me and my buddy's a few years younger than me, but we could hear those turkeys drumming big time.
Well, you can hear drumming at 60 at a distance. You can hear drumming more than most human beings. Like, you can hear it at a distance.
I can feel it.
I never hear drumming. I tell people I feel it.
No, I hear it. You know,
I feel it in the back of my thighs somehow.
But you ask my wife. My wife says I need to get hearing aids.
That's called selective hearing, Mike. If she would just speak to you like a drumming.
Yeah. But anyway, I'm very fortunate. So sometimes when I go and there's somebody with me, and I'll say, "Did you hear that turkey gobble?" "No, I didn't hear it." "Well, a minute later, did you hear that one over there gobble?" "No, didn't hear it." So it might be that I'm hearing them so far, mm-hmm, that other people can't hear them that far. And I might hear two or three or four or five more turkeys maybe than somebody else will.
No, that's a good point.
Because of my hearing is so good. I hope I never lose that. I always wear earplugs when I'm weed eating or blowing, you know, with my blower, air blower, whatever. I try to always wear my earplugs to protect my ears for turkeys.
Yeah, so be like Mike, not like me, and have that better hearing. Hey, we're coming back. More of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors live from Mike's hunting camp as we get ready for a turkey hunt up here in the Black Belt tomorrow morning. Back, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, glad to have y'all here on the Saturday morning, even though we recorded this earlier in the week, in this first week of turkey season, as Mike and I are up at his place in the Black Belt and get ready to head out in the morning. Got pretty decent weather, but as we said earlier, I mean, turkeys are turkeys.
You never know. Tomorrow morning, I think it's going to be about 40-something degrees and light wind, about 8 mile an hour.
I just walked
wind.
Out on your porch out here, and it's pretty fantastic.
Yep. So hopefully tomorrow morning will be a good morning. So I told you my first turkey kill. Tell me your first turkey kill.
Right. So, yeah, turkey hunted through the 80s, just about once a year. So my late father had a friend who was a big turkey hunter. This is back in the 80s when it was, you hunted in the 70s, but still by the 80s, it wasn't everybody turkey hunting.
Yeah.
And so I grew up, we'd go about once a year. You know, Dad worked all the time, but he'd try to make time for me, and we'd go with his buddy. And he had a place out, I think Outlot Road. I mean, I was so little.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're loaded up in the K5 Blazer. I was so little that I'd fall asleep in the back of the thing and get out there. And back when they would build blinds out in these fields. I mean, talk about wood and all that stuff. And I remember going out there. So this is not the kill, but I remember going out there, and it was back in the days when you yelp three times and you shut up.
Yep.
I mean, kids, not just kids, any of us watching video, and I cut and do all kind of stuff. The stuff I would do now, if that man who took me growing up and my father, if they would have heard me do that, he'd have slapped the taste out of my mouth. You yelp three times.
You would never go again.
Correct. You yelp three times, you put the call down, and you shut up.
That's right. And so, you wait for 30, 45 minutes or an hour.
So I remember, before we get to the kill, so I remember going on these hunts out Lot Road, and I would sit there, and I think it's my first or second hunt. We're sitting there, Dad and I, so the man who took us is over in the woodline calling, Dad and I are in this blind, built all these logs and stuff in the middle of this field. And not only did he yelp three times and shut up, like you said, you do not move for 30 minutes. And, you know, when you're probably, I think I was probably 11, 12-year-old boy, you told me not to move. I thought the hand of God would come down and slap me if I moved. So I remember sitting there, and there are turkeys, and I saw some hens come in front of us, and birds gobbling behind us, but I can't turn around and look at them.
Right.
Because you're not allowed to move. And I just remember this, and here I am at 50, getting ready to be 52 years old. I remember it back then, that out of the right corner of my eye, I could see blue of that gobbler's head.
Yeah.
You know, lit up white and blue. And it was in the right corner of my eye. And, Mike, I wanted to turn my head so badly and look at that gobbler, and I couldn't stand it. It stayed just where I just did, the very right corner of my eye, got the white and blue of this gobbler's head. And I did finally, after like, it felt like 3 days when you're 11 or 12 years old, probably about 30 seconds, I started doing what Dad told me he could do. He said, if you move your head so slowly that I can't see you move it, just little ticks at a time, you can move your head. And at that point, I turned my head, and my gun's laying in my lap. The old, still have it, 20.
Pointed the other way.
Oh, yeah, of course, laying across my lap. Pointed the other way, my single-shot 20-gauge Winchester full choke.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's what I'm hunting with, 20-gauge Winchester hammer gun full choke. And I turn, and I am, you talk about the distance, you shot that 6-7 feet, 5-6 feet, that first gobbler. I finally turn and look. Two more steps, and that gobbler would have been in the blind with us. And it was right there, to the point I could swear I heard the feathers rubbing across each other as he was folding in and out of strut. And I shook so badly that you probably could have felt it on the Richter scale, you know. But I didn't know what to do. I didn't know, you know, I wasn't going to have the hand of God slap me and turn around and try to shoot the bird.
Yeah.
You know, I was a kid and sat there, and that bird was that close and ended up drifting off. We didn't kill him. I thought I did everything right. And the man who kept inviting us out there, when he came out of the wood line, he said, after he'd been lecturing me about everything, just like that, he said, what are you doing, boy? You want to kill a turkey? You got to kill a turkey. You just sat there. So I get that lecture. And we went out, maybe I was 12 or 13 when that happened, because about every year, but like I said, Dad worked a bunch. We went once a year. Yeah. But I was hooked on it. And about time I was, let's see, probably 17 years old, 16, 17 years old. So I went to college when I was 17.
Yeah.
I think, and that was, I was probably 17. In my first year at the University of Alabama, we drove some public land not far from the university, actually about an hour and 15 from the university.
Yeah.
A popular big piece of national forest. And I did a hunt and chased birds around. They gobbled. I don't know when I was yelping to it, but they were gobbling me. They were just gobbling. It was just fantastic back then. So this is it. This is like Eddie Salter, if you're listening, here's a story. So they never came to me.
Yeah.
And I sat and I sat and I sat till my legs went numb, the whole 9 yards. And I finally gave up and stood up. And when I stood up, I heard leaves crackle behind me. I turned around. The gobbler was fanned to me, looking the other way. And I shot him.
How about
that? He came to me. I never saw him until I stood up and got ready to leave.
And he was back there drumming, but you didn't know what drumming was
at that point.
You was probably listening to something. I hear a truck way truck off somewhere.
Right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. But I didn't see him. He didn't come the way the goblin, and I was in some pretty, I was at Oak Mulgee, so pretty hilly, mountainous stuff. And I thought he was going to come up, I don't know, where they gobbled over there, so they're going to come down a ridge and come to me. Well, this bird, he come in behind me.
They never come straight to you.
No. At 17, I did not know that.
Yeah.
And so I'm
rarely,
watching that way. So I had stood, I still remember this. So as there's feeling coming back into my legs, and that feeling of blood coming back to your legs, I'm pulling the hammer on my old 870. You know, I was shooting like whatever fives or whatever I had back then, Winchester fives, whatever I'd gone and bought at the store. And so it was not, no kind of like he came through and the sun was shining. Like I got up to leave because I'd given up and turned around. The bird was strutting, but had his fan and his butt up to me, couldn't see me.
So did you shoot through the fan?
I sure as heck did.
You never saw his head.
Well, I knew it was a gobbler.
And yeah, you knew it was a gobbler and you just shot through his fan and killed him. Hey. You killed him.
So I arrived back at our our domicile at the University of Alabama, which is like...
With your chest poked out.
My chest poked out, yep. And fed my roommates and the people in the house next to us, and we had big, big time with the first turkey. Yeah, but after years of... But yeah, my first experience, like I said, I had one about step into the blind with me in Mobile County, but it wasn't until 5-6 years later that I killed one, and only did that because... That gobbler had a death wish and did something stupid, and I killed him.
Well, same one, you know, same way when I killed my first one.
I wish I could tell you it was some great thing, and I got him. He came off the limb. He's trying.
Yeah, well, me too. But
I was looking the wrong way. I just stood up. The blood was rushing back in my legs. I'm like, oh my gosh, that's a turkey! Boom.
Yeah, you know, but when you go by yourself and kill your first turkey by yourself, whether you've killed 4 or 5 with other people or something, mm-hmm. but when you go by yourself, you do the calling, you call one up and kill it, that's what sets you on fire.
No, for sure. And you talk about chest puffed up, I think I rode the feathers off that thing all around University of Alabama back in 1990.
Well, you would. I mean, that was a big accomplishment.
But yeah, started and really started getting back into it. And it's funny, it's something we've talked about on the show before. So I found 2 hunting clubs that were west of Tuscaloosa, out towards Aliceville, Carrollton, all that stuff out there. And I found those places. One of them, I had a full membership because I deer hunted. It was like a 400-acre club. Y'all know these. Here's college folks. It was a 400 acres with about 16 members.
Yeah.
The club I was in. But no turkey hunters.
Yes.
The other club was a deer club, but none of them turkey hunted. And I had turkey rights. I think it's like $180, some random number. Like, you know, and I worked in radio back then.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I worked and did a lot of remotes at car lots and all that stuff to make the money, but paid for it. So I had 2 of those places. And then I really got into it. And that's what I'm talking about. The 1990s. And there are turkeys everywhere. And that year, so it would have been my sophomore year going forward, I just became poison on turkeys after that. But yeah, my first one was just because I got up to give up and went to leave. And that stupid turkey was fanning and looking the other way.
And listen, that's happened to me several times too. You know, thinking, well, there's no turkeys. I've been sitting here 4 or 5 hours and nothing going on, and just get up and turn around, and here's one. I see one coming, you know. Or
well, and that same man who used to scare me as a boy, he'd say, "Do this, Sean." He said, "You sit until you can't sit anymore." I said, "Yes, sir." He said, "And then wait another half hour." As a kid, I used to be like, "I can't. I'm a 12-year-old boy, and I want to jump." You know, like he'd say, "Sit till you can't stand it anymore." I said, "Yes, sir." And he said, "Then sit for another 30 minutes. Yep.
When that root gets about 6 inches up your butt, mm-hmm. you sit another 30 minutes till it gets about 8 inches.
That's right.
You know? So but listen, things have changed now because we have these chairs.
Yes.
And that has made all the difference in the world for me as far as being able to sit for a long period of time. And
I didn't bring my chair. I did bring 2 cushions, though.
But I've got chairs. Don't worry. Okay. I got 3.
Because I got my 2 cushions.
I got 4 cushions.
And I got a new vest this year, by the way, that has a thing that folds out that I don't even need a tree. Okay, it folds out like a lounge chair. Like. Well,
you still probably want to use my chair.
Okay.
But, you know, things have changed on that. Sure. So I sit for a long time. We've talked about this before.
Mike sits longer than any turkey hunter I've ever hunted with, maybe even more than that man who started me all those years ago.
But that has been my luck.
Sure. I mean, patience kills turkeys.
And it does. That's the old saying. For years, you know, years and years ago, I knew people that they would go and sit from morning till dark, mm-hmm. you know, but they killed turkeys. They killed a lot of turkeys. But, you know, I sit, you know, 4, 5, 6 hours mm-hmm. in one spot most of the time.
Which is, as I've hunted with him before, this is the God's honest truth. It's interesting, though. So my best buddy, my best turkey hunting buddy, who you know, he and I hunt different. I hunt more like you. I'm not completely like you. But as I've gotten older, right. I hunt a lot more patient.
Well, that has something to do with it, too.
and he runs and guns.
Yeah.
And we look at our numbers. By the end of the season, we kill the same number.
Yeah.
Most of the time. And he's covered more acreage, and I haven't, but we end up with the same number of turkeys.
But what he has done is he has disturbed your woods.
Well, that's all he does. Yeah. If you're listening this morning, you're yelper whipping on my turkeys, so quit.
Yeah. But I'm just saying, that does make a difference, too. And like we were talking about, the piece of property we're going to hunt tomorrow morning, mm-hmm. it's that 40-year-old pine plantation's been thinned one time, and it's like a hardwood bottom.
Yeah, you can't get up and move.
If I get up, there's a few little places I can get up and move a little bit. But if I'm not around those little places where I can get around these little bitty thick spots, I got to sit there. I mean, if I get up and start moving around, I have just messed my whole woods up.
Yeah, just because you can't see them doesn't mean they didn't see you. I mean, I spent enough time hunting in the river swamp that you'd never see them, but all of a sudden you had all this gobbling going on, and yep. You went to move. Oh, they're going to get on this side of this slough or this gut. Let me get up here. And then all of a sudden all the gobbling stopped.
Yeah.
You never saw them. They saw you.
They saw you. Absolutely. That's what happens. So I think that my success has been that I sit still for a long period of time.
Like no one I've ever seen. That's for sure.
Yeah.
All right. We're coming right back. More of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors live from Mike's camp. Well, live at this point from Mike's camp right here on FM Talk 106.5. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, as we get ready to turkey hunt tomorrow here at Mike's camp. Talk a little bit before we hit the hay and ready to hit the woods for tomorrow. All right. So we talked turkey hunting. Came up here looking at land. And I want to talk about what's going on with recreational land right now. Values, what people are looking for, what rings your phone the most. What's going on with that right now?
Well, I think the prices are kind of stable and probably falling a little bit. Okay. They're not rising right now at all. One of the causes is because interest rates. The interest rate right now for buying land is anywhere from 8 to 10%.
Okay.
It depends on your credit score and everything. Which, 8.5, 9%.
A couple of years ago it would have been
4%.
Okay.
4.5%. 5%, somewhere around in there. So things have slowed up a little bit because of the interest rate.
So if somebody's looking, whether they're selling a property, looking for their next property, have saved up money, looking to get in a property, because of that, those prices have stabilized, so maybe a good time for them to get into it.
It has stabilized, yes. Some people I've talked to several people, they're just going to wait and see what the economy's going to do because they keep thinking that the economy's going to go upside down and they got some cash, and they're thinking they're going to buy some land if the economy goes bad. So
yeah, but and I don't know. I mean, this is what you do, full time. But I don't know, the days of you talked about where we are here, the 1980s soybean crash up here that brought prices down for land up here, Marengo and Dallas and, Hale County and all that down so far. I don't think there's a bottom like that, like it used to be.
No, I don't think it is either, Sean. But it's still
because recreational land is not just. It used to be just the farm. I mean, I come from farming people. You know me. I mean, it was all the value of what the ag would produce per acre.
That's right.
But it's not that anymore.
Well, back then there weren't people buying land to hunt on.
No, I can only imagine my grandfather thinking.
Very few people. I mean, people either owned the land and lived on it, or they had cows on it, or they were
produced
farming
a row crop. Yes,
row cropping it. And then in the '80s, the economy went upside down, and these farmers just couldn't afford their land anymore. So, but they didn't have recreational buyers to buy it back then.
There was just a very few people who saw that recreational value.
That's
right. But that has changed now. That's what I'm saying. So, I'm asking you. Right now, these prices have leveled out, and it's kind of a time that if you've got some cash, you're getting out of one property or you saved up cash, you can make a deal.
Especially if you're doing a 1031 tax exchange, yes.
You can get a lot more maybe for the money than you could 3 or 4 years ago.
Yes, very possible.
But the other part of this is this idea that if you wait around for this big, because my mentality is also contrarian, and I think when everybody wants to buy a stock, I want to sell it. And when everybody wants to sell a stock, I want to buy it.
Yeah.
But in land, I'm trying to look at this fairly. I don't see the bottoms like people think are coming because there's this recreational value.
Yeah. I don't think it's going to be the bottom that it used to be, Sean. I just don't believe that anymore. But I have seen it go down Let's see, when was it? In the 90s? No, it was 2008. That's what it was.
Okay.
When the economy went bad.
Well, that was pretty tough.
Okay, yeah, that's when it was. The you know, some people, let's just say their land at that time was $3,000, $3,500 an acre.
Right.
And it was going, it went down to like $1,500, $1,800, $2,000 an acre. So it dropped.
That's
pretty, pretty considerable, yes.
How much, when you talk, when you're valuing properties, whether somebody comes to you with a property to sell, or you're looking for a property for somebody, how much of it's based in timber value? You know, that, I mean, I grew up in a where they it was either ag value, running livestock, or timber value. How much is, like, how many trees per acre versus how much recreational value? What's the bigger?
Well, the timber value has gone way down, Sean. You know that
I
personally.
Do. Yes.
You know, back...
pine trees ain't worth what they used to be.
No, they're not. I mean, let's just say chip and saw.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? That was, you know, back a few years back, you could get $20, $25, $30 a ton.
Yeah.
Now, what is it, like 10, 12, 15?
Yeah,
looking, somewhere around
sub
in
20,
there?
For sure, yeah.
Yeah.
It's sub 15.
Pup wood.
Yeah, we're looking at some pulpwood prices tonight.
Yeah, what is it? $6?
Yeah,
a ton?
About $6 a ton. I mean, it's not until you even in some of the poles and pilings and stuff that you get the mid 20s, that stuff that used to be $60 a ton.
Yeah, I mean, poles used to be 60, 80, mm-hmm. you know, or maybe even more a ton.
Yeah, you're not getting it.
So, you know, so the timber value is not as good as it used to be now. Farmland now.
Open ground, yeah. What
it it has
that?
Gone way up. Farmland is worth way more than timberland now.
Isn't that crazy? Because, you know, what you talked about happening in the 80s is we talked about how there weren't as many turkeys up here we're about to hunt, and now there are more because so much stuff was planted in timber. It was a better idea for these people back then to take ag land and put it in trees.
Absolutely.
For the payoff. And it's funny how things go in cycles. Here we are 40 years later, and the inverse is true. The pines are, I mean, if you can make enough money off the pines to get them out of there, make a little money and stump that
stump
place,
it.
Better put it back in open ground.
And people are doing that.
Yeah.
People are doing that. So, but, you know, back in the 80s when they came out with that CRP program, the government did.
Everybody got in at the same time. That was the problem, too.
Yeah, a lot
we're
of
flooded.
You know, within 5 years of each
yes.
other, I mean, a lot of people got into it. And they paid you like $45 an
mm-hmm.
acre.
And that's in 1980s money.
Yeah, and that's big money.
Yeah, it is.
You know, so they paid you to plant them.
Right.
And they planted them. And then
they paid you to leave them there.
Yeah, and then you got to harvest them, you know. The
problem is I think so many people waited at that point for retirement and all that, that they started cutting over, like, all of it within a decade, within a 10-year window, so many people started doing those cuts that it flooded the market.
It did. Absolutely. You know, the piece of property we're going to hunt tomorrow.
Right.
He did that. The owner put it in a CRP program in 84, and here it is
2024,
40 years later. He's cut it one time, but he did real good on his first cut because, you know, the trees were pretty big at the time, the first time he cut it, because it was wet and he couldn't get in there and get them for, you know, 4 or 5 years later than what he would have. So he'd end up doing real good. And now these trees... they're not worth what they used to be.
Isn't
but
that crazy? They're bigger.
They're way bigger.
They're way bigger, but they're not as valued. So I think it's something for people to research, is to think about what used to be. For my grandfather's time, it was production for row crop and cattle and all those things, turned into trees. Now it's back to row crop and cattle and recreational value.
So
look at a piece and say, maybe the turkeys and the quail and the deer are worth more than the pine trees.
Yeah, they are. Recreational value is big time.
It's just something to think about, whether you're selling or buying out there. Speaking of which, we don't talk about this often enough. This is what you do every day. People have got a piece they want to sell. People got a piece they want to buy. How do they get in touch with you?
Well, Southern Timberlands, we got a good group of guys over there. Mike Dees is my broker, and Jason Smith. We all know Jason, the meteorologist.
He's okay.
Yeah, he's okay sometimes.
Yeah.
Anyway, and me, and we have a good group over there, but Southern Timberlands, you can get me through there.
All right. Mike, I appreciate you having me here at your camp, and I can't wait to kill one of your turkeys tomorrow.
I hope you do.
All right. We'll do it all again next week and give you a report on tomorrow's hunt right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors.